Hey, does the term defense against configurations mean something to you? It should, and it will when you stick around for this episode of CISO Tradecraft. Hello and welcome to another episode of CISO Tradecraft, the podcast that provides you with the information, knowledge, and wisdom to be a more effective cybersecurity leader. My name is G. Mark Hardy. I'm your host. And today I have a special guest, Yuri Tsibere, which I'm sure I didn't quite get the vowel right because I was practicing that. So my apologies up front. But Yuri, welcome to the show. Thank you for being part of CISO Tradecraft.
Thank you for having me here. Thank you.
Now, I had started out talking a little bit about what we're going to cover in today's episode, which is defense against configurations. But first, let me understand a little bit about your background, because you work for a company called ThreatLocker, and you're a product manager. Now, when I used to work for a product software company, that was years ago, back in the 90s, it was Accent Technologies. I had friends who were product manager, and I remember calling one aside saying, what do you really do? We'll save all of our listeners that embarrassment of asking somebody, what do you do as a product manager?
Truly saying, I'm doing a lot. So in general, product manager should think about something like product strategy and all the stuff. But here we need to do more than that. You need to investigate some interesting cases with our clients, not only devs, but as a product manager as well, to understand what you need to do next, how to update your roadmap, what tasks must be prioritized on that behalf. Generally, also writing epics and user stories for development teams, manage development teams and priorities.
It sounds about as complicated as being a CISO, like a million different moving parts and never quite enough time to get to all of them. Welcome to the club. What brought you here, though? What did you do before being here at ThreatLocker?
Oh, my story is interesting enough. I born and lived in the city of Cherkasy. It's central Ukraine, and had the first PC when nobody has it. It was the 6 Spectrum copy, Soviet Union copy of ZX Spectrum. Yeah, the only plant in Soviet Ukraine was in our city. We had like plenty of them. That was the start. Then I attended telecommunication institute, not telecommunication, but IT institute, and was learning their IT and telecommunication stuff. And worked at the AT&T of Ukraine, it's called UMC. There I faced like huge security measures because you are in environment when user data can be exposed to you as employee. So you need to limit any unwanted data exposure. Even then, it was quite a while ago, we have tons of security measures to limit that data. After that, I was working as a product manager in e-commerce for quite some time, and here I am at ThreatLocker. So generally, a product manager in general in development is doing quite similar things in any industry. But my technical background helps me to be on top of security things here.
So it sounds like growing up in Soviet Ukraine that you had a focus on security from an early day. And of course, that becomes almost cultural. So here you are today working on cybersecurity, and you're really looking at some unique challenge here, and that is the risk of misconfiguration and how misconfiguration can lead to a breach, and perhaps it's a big one. And oftentimes when we look at the statistics, we say, is it lack of a patch? Okay, we can fix the patching. Is it lack of user education? We can go ahead and download some training. Is it whatever physical security? We'll go ahead and badge an entry. We'll do an MFA, for example, and we think we've got everything covered. But as it turns out, that misconfigurations could really be the next major attack vector and maybe has been a rather major attack vector for some time. So how does that factor into the potential sources of breach, and how much should CISOs really be concerned about the status of their configurations or misconfigurations?
So generally, when you're installing an OS on PC or laptop or where, it comes with default configuration. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In general, it's okay to require compatibility with most of devices, let's say, or software or old software. But nowadays, these default configurations can be vector of attack. So let's say your system is supporting SMB version 1 by default, and it's known, there is known breach in SMB version 1. And not only for that, basically for any configuration, there are defaults, and they could be used by threat actors to breach in. We decided to create a very simple in its idea, very powerful tool to track, scan your machine, track your configuration, and give you opportunity to see what you want to change or what you need to change. Also, it relates to security frameworks like FedRAMP or NIST. So you can, in your organization, of course, someone is coming in, someone is leaving. Not every device is tracked and set up correctly. Could be set up correctly, yeah? This tool can highlight you that you have 5 PCs with misconfiguration and another 10,000 are okay with our frameworks or so. So, yeah, it's a very powerful tool.
And what you mentioned, even though it's just a handful of devices that were misconfigured, that can lead to a major breach because someone says, oh, I'm at 99.9% okay. I fly a lot. If I got on a plane that had a 99.9% chance of landing safely, but a 0.1% chance of not landing safely, at 100 flights a year, within statistically 5.5 years or so, I'm going to likely experience a bad event. You're right, it needs to be covered, but let's dig into this a little bit more. You guys have called this DAC, or defense against configurations. And so in plain terms, what does defense against configurations mean? And why did we pick that name? Because it was unique. I was researching around. I don't see anybody else using it yet.
Defense is about that misconfiguration is a breach. Mm-hmm. So you need to have some kind of tool to defend yourself. You as a company need to have this tool to highlight that you are vulnerable to those breaches. So that's why it's easy enough.
Yeah, I think you're naming it, if you defense against misconfigurations, it'd be DAM. It's give me the damn tool. Where is that damn tool? It doesn't play well. I'm sure marketing had something to say about that.
Sounds not very polite.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, for those who are worried, I was just referring to the acronym. So I'm off the hook. Yeah. Now, but what types of misconfiguration? You mentioned typically it'd be operating systems coming right out of the box, or today we really don't use shrink wrap stuff anymore. We'll spin up a VM or something like that. Is it more than just the operating system, or is this just focused on the OSs?
It focuses on these configurations. Currently, we are covering Windows, fully covering Windows, and we are adding checks like every day. I guess there are more than 100 and maybe more than 200 right now checks. It is, like I said, this SMB V1 or RDP exposed to internet, or you're not locking your machine in, I don't know, in 15 minutes or 10 minutes. when we need to match some kind of security and configuration framework. So there is, you need to lock it automatically in 5 minutes or even less. So those types of checks.
And that's actually fundamental to security. If you can identify these misconfigurations, and some of them, as you said, are default. Now, why does a vendor ship it by default like that? Because most users expect something to work when they plug it in and turn it on. If you plugged it in and turned it on and said, wait, you have to configure 99 different things before you can make it useful, they wouldn't sell a whole lot of copies. And so as a result, it's got secure enough, but not for an enterprise. And so what it sounds like you can do with the DAC, you can identify misconfigurations really before they can become exploited. Things such as even inserting a USB drive. What happens when I put a USB drive? If somebody leads a Rode Apple, which is a USB that is an auto start. Wait, I got one right here. Here's my USB drive, although it's got Windows 10 on it. So it's still sitting here waiting because Windows 10, of course, is gone. But how many people out there still have Windows 10 running somewhere in your enterprise? I'd say shame on you, but this particular device that I'm recording on today is on the one-year special probation of Windows 10. That said, they're not doing the regular security updates, and if you have to support legacy equipment, something like this would be absolutely essential to make sure that you don't end up with out-of-configuration or misconfigured operating systems and things like that. And you'd mention frameworks, and I'll get to that in a couple minutes, about different frameworks and how we could do that. But how does this approach for doing the defense against configurations differ from a typical configuration management or hardening tool where you say, yeah, press that button and it throws a bunch of switches and you're done? What are the differentiators that make this approach work better than, for example, if I just downloaded a big fat script, ran the script against my OS, and when it was done, it said, okay, yeah, you're up to speed?
Our implementation based on our agent, which is installed on every machine. If you want to secure your environment, you need to install a Threat Locker engine, and it constantly checks against those configurations. It's near real time. You can see the update in bad way, if you will. Also, and you have a dashboard where you can track all your organization or computer groups one by one, or drill down to exact one PC or Mac, or in future Linux, that is exposed in some way with that misconfiguration. So we have a bunch of tools to make it easy enough to see, is there an issue, and fix it.
Right.
Yes, so
Yeah, you had mentioned you had the threat engine or the Threat Locker engine running, and that's really important. I had a chance to talk to Danny Jenkins. He is the CEO, co-founder of Threat Locker. And when I was over at Black Hat, he is out there working the floor, doing product demonstrations and things like that. I said, what CEO does that? Obviously this one. And for those of us who remember that episode, it was a little short one. I tried to respect his time. I said, dude, you're awesome. You're out there leading by example. I thought it was pretty cool. And so now what you're doing is you're saying, hey, for our folks who are running these Threat Locker engine, you're now going to expand that capability. So this doesn't require, does this require a separate license or anything like that? Or it's not, it's already there. So you're doing this for your customers. That's awesome.
Because it's very important. We think that it is very important to highlight those misaligned configurations. It's not only Threat Locker secures everything, but we are showing that you might be misconfigured, and that could be a threat vector.
So I understand that, and again, I don't use your Threat Locker tool. My enterprise is not big enough, but in reading, doing my homework for this episode, is that the DAC becomes your default landing page and your Threat Locker portal, and then using those agents, it's going to scan on a daily basis and say, hey, here you are in your dashboard. Everything's green, or which is good, or everything not so good. And then from there, you can call a security leader's attention to issues right away. And so what happens between the time that a misconfiguration is detected? Do you do any prioritization of risk, or do you just simply just dump it on the dashboard, say, go figure it out? And then do you give any guidance for figuring out how to remediate?
Yeah, when there is some misconfiguration, we have three levels of threateness, if you will. So Yeah. Of course, we will highlight more the most bad configuration and put it on first screen, if you will. Also, in every check, you can click it and read what it is about, what we are expecting to have there, and how to update it or change it to meet our expectations.
Yeah, and that is awesome. And let me continue on that, if I may, because you had mentioned previously different risk frameworks and compliance standards, like the ISO 27001 critical security controls, essential 800-171 list, et cetera. How does that add value? Because I would think that if I have to meet a compliance requirement and I have a regular reporting, a lot of times what I get as a CISO is I'll get a once a year questionnaire. Do you have this? Is this turned on? Is this plugged in, et cetera, et cetera? And then you just get a snapshot in time. And it might be when you suck in your chest and hold your breath and try to look really good for the auditor. And then when they walk away, you go, but here, you get the equivalent of an audit every day, if you will. So you can tell if there's been any configuration drift. And that's hugely important, in my opinion.
So you can continuously check that report. It updates every day. And if you're not aligned with any compliance, which you should be, then you can fix it in one day. That is very powerful and interesting tool to if you need to stay in touch with the compliance, not only for that auditor.
But just doing the right stuff in general. And I often tell CISOs, I said, if you want to go ahead and secure your enterprise, you can roll your own framework. But the hard part is getting executive buy-in. If I say, this is a GMARC security framework, who are you? As compared to, hey, this has been work through the ISO process, or it comes from the National Institute of Standards and Technology, or it could be an industry standard like PCI DSS and things like that. But ThreatLocker is more than just this, okay? So you've got allow listing, ring fencing, network control. So this essentially, combined with that, gives you a much more holistic understanding of where my security posture is in my enterprise. Would you agree with that?
Yes, of course. Our main products and first products, the allow listing and then storage control, ring fencing, all of those are aligned with our deck checks. Also includes several deck checks for how do you use allow listing. You can misconfigure even that because you are the customer. You have all the authority and rights to privileges to edit anything you want. Maybe you can allow some kind of phishing link just to, I don't know, to try to test your employees. But yes, we are checking against every configuration, even ours configuration.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Now, I think for those of us who are looking at it from a technical perspective, we say, yeah, why not? Why would I say no to this? But if we're trying to go ahead and get executives or management, particularly if you have somebody listening who's, I'm not a ThreatLocker customer, but I've been looking at them or considering them, is this enough to push somebody over the edge to say, guys, we need this thing here? If we had to go ahead and make this a business discussion, what type of risks and costs are organizations assuming when they have no visibility into misconfiguration of the OSs on their platforms in their enterprise?
Oh, I guess risks are huge because only one that you need to misconfigure once and then threat actor can access your environment. So you need to constantly not do misconfiguration. And yeah, it's very important to understand that those checks are constant, and as your organization is growing, new machines are added, new people are added, there can be misconfiguration. And that is the one thing threat actors are looking for. Yeah.
Yeah. And it would seem to be low hanging fruit. I know that I had run some Windows XP virtual machines. I'm sorry, XP is my old guilty pleasure. People look in the background, they say, you got these old Dell computers. I said, yo, those are all XP machines from 20 years ago. Who knows? They might come back and save the world someday. But to make the XP virtual machine talk to my host OS, I had to enable SMB V1. Yeah. And so now I'm gone with that. That virtual machine is gone. Thank you very much. But you got me thinking, did I turn that back off? Because I might have enabled some temporary misconfiguration for valid business purpose. I had to access something in there. But if I forget to turn it on, these misconfigurations accumulate. And so we don't always have that, but we've also got configuration drift where we forget about things, privileges that we create, and then we forget about them. They're dormant. They work. As you had mentioned before, remote desktop protocol, do we have an RDP facing the internet? And I might have had a valid reason at some point, but I shut it down, but I didn't disconnect it. But your DAC, this is going to detect all that stuff, and especially at scale.
Yeah, of course. It is tracking everything in your organization to give that dashboard, to draw that dashboard and give you a report of all your organization. If you, let's say, yes, it's a good example because I'm using XPVM as well, but I don't use SMB1. I figured out some other way to have communication.
Okay, after this call, we'll have that technical discussion because I want to go back and fill that hole. It's like, how does that work? Okay, but let's skip over that because everybody else would just think we're geeking out on our call. But when we get back to being able to implement this, and let's say management says, yeah, throw the switch and turn it on, we often have to justify what we're doing, and we do so with metrics. And so we want to find metrics that are valuable, that demonstrate the value of any change that we have made to our environment, particularly when it comes to security. So what type of metrics should we be looking at that allows us to go back and say implementing this defense against configuration has actually returned a positive result?
The metrics for securing, it's zero breaches. But
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. The main metric. But we have inside our tech product, we have some kind of scoring for everything. And you can look in on your tech dashboard and understand right away, you're bad, okay, or a good score. Basically, when most or all, not most, but all of critical configurations are set in proper way, then you will be in good position. But there are also nice to haves to configure it better than you have it right now. But cybersecurity is a tough spot because we need to secure environment. But yet people or employees must do their workflows in proper way, in easy way. So we are not becoming obstacle for business to do the workflow. So that's why you can have not the 100% green deck report, but most of bad things should be and must be configured in proper way.
Got it. And so we can then potentially, although zero breaches is the ideal state, reality is we could also look at things such as, have we reduced the number of incidents, maybe not to zero, but a reduction in that. If an attacker does try to get in, can we reduce that dwell time? Because maybe somebody makes a mistake and misconfigures in an afternoon. The next morning, I'm going to know with your tool set as compared to finding out a month later when a breach is reported or 6 months later when the auditor is discovered or something like that. Are there any steps that I could do if I say, hey, this makes sense? How would I prepare my enterprise for the rollout of this? Do I have to go ahead and make changes and configurations and rewire everything? Or is this just simply an easy to do thing for an existing ThreatLocker customer to create the opportunity to turn on DAC?
DAC would be turned on not yet, but soon enough. It would be turned on but by default for every customer. Yeah, all our customers will see the deck report and deck dashboard. so they can roll out with the like initial installation of our ThreatLocker agent. But you need to have at least a day to collect all the checks and create the report. That's for new customers. For existing ones, it would be much easier and faster.
Got it. Now, we hear a lot about zero trust today. And I think it's more than just a buzzword. It's an important way to go ahead and protect your enterprise where you encrypt your communications, you authenticate everything. How does DAC fit into zero trust, particularly with regards to endpoint configuration and control? Is it a nice to have, or is it really the thing that guarantees that you're more likely to achieve zero trust because you have confidence that your configurations are set up properly?
Our zero trust platform includes all our products, and the approach is to do not trust anything. Like in default configurations, they trust something or most of things, and then you can adjust. Our approach is to allow only needed. In every instance, allow only needed application and allow only needed communication between applications. Allow only needed storage folders or directories. That all combining with our DAC is securing your organization in, I think it is in proper way, because previously, before Zero Trust, there was like antivirus thing that is based on heuristic approach. So you're learning threats afterwards. So you need to keep up with that huge database of threats which are already used. You don't know what the new threat is. Our approach is pretty simple. Do not allow those threats to breach in.
Yeah, and I've seen some new types of attacks. So the click fix has been prevalent in 2025. I had a client, senior executive, who got the little thing, oh, prove you're a human, hit Windows R, Control V, Enter, and that keystroke sequence proves you're a human. It does prove you're a gullible human because you just copied the contents of the buffer given to you by the malicious website, pasted it into a Windows run command, and execute. That's one type of approach where it seems that having a proper config to say, hey, you cannot go ahead and run, for example, PowerShell scripts as a regular end user, particularly nothing at the privilege level. Even AI-powered attacks where we're getting to the point where, and I've read recently, where there have been discovered some attackers that are using fully AI-powered autonomous attack mechanisms. No human in the loop. They fire this thing up and it's pre-programmed to go after that. So I would think that if I had the assurance that comes with a ThreatLocker DAC, that I would feel a lot better about this change in the threat environment, because the way those get in is through misconfigurations. No offense to our users, but the old saying, you can't fix stupid, you will always find a way to create some sort of gullibility in legitimate, smart, hardworking, dedicated employees. They just like, man, I did not see that coming. I didn't know about that. And we can't teach them all the nuances. But it seems that effective configuration, reporting, lockdown, validation is going to be huge in facing the future. So do you see any other types of threats on the horizon where being able to do the DAC is really going to help us in terms of building better defenses?
So in this case, our DAC is another layer of defense. We have our core product and a bunch of different other products, which are adding layer by layer defense against those types of threats. And we are evolving and giving another layer of defense with our defense against configuration checks. You as company security manager have all that visibility on every machine. Of course, those AI-generated threats, when you have no zero trust platform on your environment, could be very intense. But when, as you said, just verify that you are a human type, paste to run command and press enter, then our other layers of defense are in place. You can't just run that because you will be ring-fenced. Or if you, as a human, ran some malware script, which there are some scripts, yeah, and you can be ordinary human, just run it, you won't be able to really run it. And just blocked.
Got it. Yeah, so that sounds like an awesome addition to the security tools that we have. Now, you had mentioned earlier that we do Windows endpoints, that you're very shortly, if not like this month or something like that, going to do all the Mac endpoints and potentially Linux going forward. And that makes sense to me because you're going to go for the largest number of systems down. But are there any other future enhancements on the DAC or other things with ThreatLocker that CISOs or security leaders should be aware of so they realize, in a way, get a peek of your roadmap and see what's going forward?
I don't think that I can disclose.
All right.
There would be something interesting on Zero Trust World 26. Yes.
I was going to mention that because Zero Trust World 2026, tickets are now available. And great, I get a three-letter domain, ztw.com, zerotrustworld.com. And I got invited to that last year. And I got to tell you, honestly, I was quite surprised. I figured, okay, a vendor event, yeah, you're going to get some conference room. They're going to serve some cheap food and a bunch of speakers selling his stuff and a whole bunch of swag in the back. You guys had this entire place over in Orlando with speakers and a floor, and this was like going to like what RSA or Black Hat was in the first couple of years, where you have not a super huge crowd, but people that you could talk to. And I talked to one guy, and I thought, this is the first time I've heard about this. He said, I've been coming for years. It's like, wow. So Zero Trust World 2026, it's coming up. If you go to ztw.com, I guess I could Google it and look at the dates on there, but it's up to everybody else to go figure out the dates. And the pricing looks bad, March 4th through the 6th in Orlando, Florida. That looks pretty good. So for chief information security officers, security leaders who say, hey, this looks like it's something I ought to be doing, the idea of being able to capture on a real-time basis the configuration of my operating systems for all these endpoints in my enterprise, and then be able to manage that going forward. Any bit of advice that you might have for a security leader who feels that maybe they're a little bit behind, but they want to catch up in terms of managing this configuration risk?
So most of our DAC checks are from those security frameworks. We process tons of pages of those security frameworks. And it's not still 100% covered, but we are getting to that. And most of answers are there. Also, we have our own DAC checks for proper configuration for ThreatLocker for our services. Mm-hmm. And the last thing I want to tell about configuration, it's not only about configuration, but you need to educate your staff not to get phished. Even the most secure system, the weakest point would be human.
So that's a very good point. Excellent. So recapping, for those people who are ThreatLocker customers, you're going to have access to the DAC and that defense against configuration or misconfiguration. It's a silent MIS, just to make sure the acronym works out right. Is a real step forward. It takes advantage of the fact you've got agents on these endpoints already. They're going to go ahead and report on a regular basis, so we don't have to rely on monthly or semi-annual audits, but in real time, we know what is misconfigured, what is most likely still back to factory defaults, which was turned on with trust by default. And in a zero trust in world, you can't do trust by default. It's not trust by default.
Yes.
And as you go forward, you've got all of your Windows endpoints are covered. In the very near future, you're going to have all of the Mac endpoints covered. It looks like Linux is coming up. You've got some exciting announcements coming up at the Zero Trust World 2026, which will be in March 4th to 6th over in Orlando, Florida. And if people want more information about ThreatLocker, they can go to the ztw.com and sign up for that, or go to ThreatLocker.com Or we'll put some link in our notes here so that people can find it. So, Yuri, I want to thank you very much for being part of our CISO Tradecraft episode. I learned a lot, and I hope our guest did too, about the importance and the ability to go ahead and manage the configurations on your endpoints, and how failure to do that creates an unforced error, creating your vulnerabilities that you should not have to threats that are going to take advantage of that, both human as well as automated. And in the future, if you will, there'll be no excuses anymore for not being able to protect that. So our guest, Yuri Tsubeli from ThreatLocker, thank you very much, sir, for being part of our show. This is your host, G. Mark Hardy. If you love the show, go ahead and follow us on LinkedIn or on Facebook or wherever you happen to follow us. Actually, I don't think we're on Facebook yet. I don't do Facebook anyway. But the point is that we've got episodes out there. And more than just the episodes, we have a Substack newsletter. And if you follow us on LinkedIn, you get a lot more than podcasts. You get a good, steady stream of information. And oh, by the way, my partner, Ross Young, just published his first book. And it is Cybersecurity's Dirty Secret, Why Most Budgets Go to Waste. So if you haven't seen that, go look for it. It's an outstanding book. And give a little plug for him here at the end, because he's done amazing work over the last 10 months or so working on that. And I've watched that grow from an idea to a manuscript to now a published book. So that's pretty awesome. So thank you very much for your time and your attention. It's your host, G. Mark Hardy. And until next time, stay safe out there.